Hey friends, Keith here. And I'm away from my studio in Montreal. I'm actually sitting in the living room of a rental cottage in the Laurentian Mountains north of the city. That's why things sound a little echoey. There's a big high ceiling here and you get all kinds of bouncy sound. Before we get to this week's story, I wanted to take a second to thank all of you who came out to watch me and five other fantastic storytellers perform at Confabulation's event at the Phi Center on March 11th. It was a blast. And I really want to, in addition to thanking those of you who came out, I want to thank Deb and Matt and Michelle and the whole team at Confabulation who really make performing stories in Montreal and being part of the storytelling community in Montreal a fantastic experience. Second, I wanted to remind all of you that we are now confirmed for TVK Live, presented by Confabulation, on May 13th at La Sala Rosa here in Montreal. So live stories, live music venue, and live music, like a real band playing the songs that saved our storytellers' lives. It's going to be a blast. And if you're interested in tickets and you haven't already signed up for the mailing list, you're going to want to get over to www.volumeknob.net to sign up for the mailing list, which will get you the periodic TVK newsletter, which will include things like first looks at links to buy tickets to TVK Live on May 13th at Sala Rosa in Montreal. It's going to be great. We're already receiving pitches from storytellers from all across Montreal, all across Quebec, and some other folks that you've heard on this show over the years that you, if you're like me, know and love. So if you want to pitch too, you're going to want to reach out to me at volumeknobpod@gmail.com, and I will send you a link to the way to pitch a story for the show on May 13th. Okay, so that's the admin stuff. I just wanted to let you know that this week's episode is another one of TVK's greatest hits. It's from the show's first season. It's from November of 2020, and it features my good friend and law school classmate, Amira Tufo. I think it's good enough that those of you who have been coming on board and joining the TVK community over the last couple of weeks and months may want to give it a spin, because it's one of the oldies, but it is definitely a goodie. And I will be back with brand new episodes of the show 2 weeks from today. Stay tuned for that. And until then, here's TVK's greatest hits with Amira Tufo. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Volume Knob, these songs that saved your life. This week, Amira and Flashdance, What a Feeling. As I record this in mid-November of 2020, almost everyone I know is tired. The sun will set today at 4:27 p.m. That's in about 1 hour. Tonight's forecast low temperature will be below 0 Celsius. It'll be winter soon, and by all accounts, it's going to be a long winter. It's nice then that this week I was able to work on a story with my friend Amira.
Well, my name is Amira Tufo. I am a lawyer and a writer, a world traveler and seeker. And the song that saved my life is Irene Cara's What a Feeling.
Amira's story is perfect for a week when we're feeling low, because it's about chasing a dream. Like running after it for years and years and years. And then, perhaps even more inspiringly, being genuinely satisfied and happy with that dream once it comes true. It's also about finding inspiration to keep chasing that dream by listening to one of the songs that saved your life.
I moved to Canada 11 years ago. That move was about a decade in the making. I was living in post-war Sarajevo, which is my hometown, when the Great North first called to me. And that's post 25 million bullets, 7,000 shells, and 10,000 casualties. The city was a really wild and feverish place in those post-war years. And it was just swarming with expats who'd come to work for the various international organizations that were doing post-war reconstruction and state building in Bosnia. I had just graduated from university, and I was making cold calls to heads of human resources, heads of departments, and whatever other heads I could reach by phone. And I had an elevator pitch ready as to why they should hire me, you know, if they ever picked up.
Do you remember your elevator pitch?
Yeah, I kind of do. The elevator pitch said something like, "Hi, my name is Amira Tufo, and I just graduated from university in the United States, and I'm just back in Bosnia, and I want to do something to help my country, and I was wondering if you had any vacancies, and if maybe I could come and speak to you." And there was this very nice lady who didn't hang up on me.
The nice lady who didn't hang up on Amira offered her a job at a human rights agency. While working there, she befriended Carlos, a Filipino-Canadian who had immigrated to Canada when he was in his early teens. One evening, while hanging out over dinner, Carlos had a serious question for Amira.
He looked at me and he said, "You don't belong here. Have you ever thought of leaving? Have you ever thought of Canada?" And then a few days later, he brought me a copy of The Economist magazine, and he showed me the ads at the back. And I remember that The Economist back in those days, and maybe it's still the case, used to have these ads that the kind of promised that they could change your life. And a lot of them had to do with securing a different passport. So he showed me this ad for Canadian immigration lawyers, and it featured a black and white maple leaf flag. And that was my first image and my first idea of Canada, this two-dimensional black and white print and this black and white flag. And for years and years after, and even to this day, that two-dimensional black and white image still somehow contains my dreams of everything that this place can be. Anyway, it wasn't long before Carlos and I were all fired up and we were putting together my Canadian immigration application. And I also applied to study law at McGill. I'd always dreamed of becoming a lawyer, and I couldn't quite imagine turning up in Canada with two suitcases and nothing to do. But it was not to be. I had actually miscalculated. I didn't have the money to finance this adventure. So I went on another one. In 2002, I moved to neighboring Kosovo, which was then undergoing its own post-war drama. And I took up a position with the United Nations. I was 23, and I felt that Canada could wait. I ended up spending 6 years in Kosovo, in the capital, Pristina, which at that time was a very small town of concrete, coal dust, and crows. There were so many crows perching in the treetops of the city's very, very few tree-lined avenues that one of these was nicknamed Birdshit Avenue. I shit you not. At this point, I had begun to envisage a career for myself, like a long-term career in international development. But I was also questioning whether this part of the world, like my part of the world, could truly be helped and how long this was going to take. I'd already spent about 7 years working in international development in Bosnia and in Kosovo, and I was no longer sure that any meaningful change could occur in my lifetime. And what I really yearned for was a was a very different kind of life, maybe a lighter and brighter life, and a very different stage to live it on. So it was at one of these interminable, interdepartmental United Nations meetings at which everyone feels moved to speak and does, that I met Hervé, who was a Frenchman who had very strong ties to Quebec. And our eyes met across the conference table and said, "This is bullshit."
Amira and Hervé became fast friends. When one day, hanging out over lunch, he asked her a strange but familiar question.
He looked at me and he said, "You don't belong here. Have you ever thought of leaving? Have you ever thought of Canada?" And the coincidence was astonishing. It was like those same words. And they resonated very deeply. They still resonated very deeply. It was like there was a seed inside me, and those words were the water that it needed to grow, to flourish. And I did feel that I did not belong in my part of the world. I felt that I belonged somewhere tolerant, somewhere thriving, multicultural, and just frankly, somewhere that wasn't drowning in the muck of history. I yearned to make a home in a place that reflected my values. But at this point, it had been nearly a decade since Carlos and I had set that whole wheel in motion, and my permanent residence papers for Canada had expired. So it wasn't long before Hervé and I were assembling my Canadian immigration application, and I was once again studying for the law school admission test. However, Canadian immigration laws had changed by this point, and it had become very difficult to make a successful application. It was no longer a sure thing. When there's nothing but a slow glowing dream that your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. And it was at this time that I started listening to Irene Cara's What a Feeling. I took up running in Pristina's only city park. And running was a laughable activity to do in public in Pristina at that time. I was the laughing stock of the neighborhood. But, you know, every day I'd put on my running shoes. Well, okay, maybe not every day. And I would plug into my iPod and I would go flying to this cheesy, amazing anthem, "To the Power of Belief." But back then, like, I don't know, there were maybe like three runners in the city and we were probably considered crazy, you know, like the crazy expats running around.
With your Irene Cara.
Yeah, at least they didn't know what I was listening to.
It's not that embarrassing.
No, I'm not embarrassed at all.
Even if the immigration rules in Canada had changed, Amira decided that she needed to redouble her efforts. First stop was the bookstore.
So I ordered two Lonely Planet guides, one for Montreal and the other for Toronto, just in case. And Montreal won. It seemed like a chaotic and merry kind of place with a touch of the third world, you know, if I can say that. And I didn't want to leave everything about the Balkans behind. So that song became my prayer. And as I ran, I imagined, while listening to the song, that I was already running in Montreal.
Immigration processes grind slowly. It took a year for Amira to receive a discouraging letter from Immigration Canada. Their permanent residency process could take 5 to 7 years, the letter said. She suddenly felt old, like a window was closing.
It wasn't time that I felt I had. I was 29 then. God, you know, if I was 29 now, but it's a different story. From that perspective, I was, you know, I was ancient and all the doors were closing. And, you know, life would happen, something would happen, and I would lose my motivation. So I called up Hervé and I cried.
Not everything was lost, however. Amira kept running, and she kept listening to a certain special, cheesy, inspirational pop song. Eventually, McGill Law School forwarded her another offer of admission to attend as a foreign student. She decided to go for it.
I saw a full-page ad in a women's magazine featuring a young woman with short hair and a striped shirt and a green bicycle standing on a street corner. And for some reason, I recognized it as me in Montreal. So I tore it out and I stuck it to my bedroom closet so I could see my future self in my future city. So finally, the summer of my planned departure arrived, and this was like 10 years after, you know, Carlos and I had first looked at that ad in The Economist. And as the date approached, I actually found myself struggling with my decision. I wondered if I was clinging to something that was no longer relevant.
It's easy to understand the source of Amira's doubt. In the intervening years, she had built a life. She had moved back to Sarajevo, her hometown. She was close to her parents. She'd built a career and bought a house, and there was a man in the picture. She wondered if she was better off with the devil she knew than trying it out with the devil she didn't. Despite this, Amira pressed on.
The night before my departure, I remember I stood at my window and I was looking at the city lights. And it occurred to me that over the course of the years to come, years that I would be spending on another continent, some of these lights would begin to go out. I was thinking of my parents. You know, they were still healthy, but they were definitely getting along in age, as well as were a number of my very dear aunts and uncles, and my heart broke. I was giving up precious time with them in the last stretch of their lives. I woke up at dawn for my 6 a.m. flight the next day. My parents took me to the airport, and I still remember the flannel shirt that my dad wore to see me off. And I wept. It all felt so wrong. Suddenly, all my conviction was gone. My resolve was gone. You know, what if it was a huge mistake? I definitely felt that it was. And I wondered whether the satisfaction of having followed the dream would compensate for the fuck up that lay ahead. I had a 1-hour layover in Munich, and as we landed, I felt completely demoralized and defeated. It just felt like this had all been a stroke of childish fancy. And I remember that the tunnel from the plane into the airport building came out next to this cafe, this very German cafe that was serving pretzels and beer. I was marching along with my head down, hunched under my backpack as if it weighed the weight of the world, and in a way, it kind of did. But then Then I heard a song playing on the cafe radio, and I'll be damned. It was What a Feeling. And all the doubt just melted away and my heart soared. Like I just knew I had made the right choice. The airport cafe said so, and the airport cafe was God. It was the universe speaking in verse. So I ran to the gate and I was the last person to board, and it turned out that my economy seat had already been taken because there was some double booking mistake. So I got bumped up to business class. And everything was gonna be all right.
And here, 11 years on, even when facing a Montreal winter, Amira is happy. The pretzel-slinging cafe gods of Munich International Airport told the truth.
I feel free today. And back then, I felt like I was in chains. Yeah, I feel free. And I feel that I belong.
Hey friend, thanks for listening. The Volume Knob is a weekly exploration of personal stories and the power of music. It's produced by Semlevent Audio, and it's edited, written, mixed, and hosted by me. My name is Keith Seri. You can follow the show on Twitter at @volumeknob1. That's the number one. On Instagram at @volume_knob. My thanks to Amira for her time and her vulnerability this week. Be sure to check out the website, www.volumeknob.net, for show notes with links to Amira's writing and storytelling. While you're there, please don't hesitate to sign up for our newsletter. Finally, I want to thank my son Miles for his 30-second review of Flashdance, What a Feeling, which I think he thinks should be from a dance movie, but he's just not sure which one. So, what'd you think?
It's kind of like, there's this one movie, I don't remember the name, but I always remember this really one weird, it was like an ice rink, but they were also playing pop music, and it was somewhat of a dance studio. Yeah, I don't remember that movie. It just very much gives me that specific vibe. I don't know why.
See you again next week on The Volume Knob for more stories about the songs that saved your life.